Bankless Nation, we got a Bankless Takes episode for you today. This is an episode of Hot Takes. Take them or leave them. The take today, why David thinks this cycle is cooked. We got to explain what you mean by that, David. Those are some strong words coming from you. Also, I think we're going to explain the bad vibes that seem to be happening in crypto right now. It's like no one's happy. And I think you're going to give us an explanation for why. Mm-hmm. Also, there's something to do with token distribution and the dynamic between the VCs versus the people. And finally, I hope we conclude with what happens next, how this all resolves or maybe doesn't resolve.
Before we get into the takes, a moment to talk about our friends and sponsors, Transporter, a new bridging app. Over $2.8 billion has been hacked from token bridges. That's about 40% of all the value that's been hacked in Web3. Transporter is built by CCIP, Chainlink's CCIP technology in the background to help securely bridge your assets from chain to chain. So users can bridge ETH, LINK, USDC, and all the other assets. Transporter.io. There is a link in its show notes to try out Transporter.
David, do you ever see that Jason Statham Transporter movie? They made like three of them.
2000s era. Right, yeah. And they increasingly started jumping the shark more and more and more, but that was kind of the point. Yeah,
this is not that. But this is how I feel like when I'm bridging in crypto. Like
Jason Statham takes your assets from chain to chain himself. Yeah. It'd
be great marketing for him. Okay, tell me, why did you want to do this episode? You actually wrote an article, just kind of like the genesis for this episode. So we know some thoughts were brewing, probably thoughts over the last couple of weeks. We've recorded some episodes, you know, one with Regan about the VCs versus the people. And then also there was the Eigenlayer experience. But tell us, like, why this episode?
I felt there's just an autopsy that's kind of needed about the state of the market right now. Autopsy implies that something's kind of dead. And I actually do think that something is kind of dead. And that is the current meta of token distributions. The current meta of token distributions is always in flux. Crypto chooses to distribute tokens in different ways all throughout its history. Like in 2013 was fork and fair launch. 2017, ICOs. 2020, liquidity mining, DeFi summer. 2021, token mints, NFT mints. So this is always something that is in flux. And I kind of think as a reaction, reflecting on the reaction of the Eigen airdrop and some of the other patterns that we've seen, I'm kind of think that this current token points and airdrop meta is cooked and in the rearview mirror. Now, we still will experience it for a while. These things don't like disappear overnight. But I think the market is ready to look for alternatives for how projects distribute tokens. And how projects distribute tokens is like a very meaningful and critical part of how this industry works. It's one of the things that defines every single era in crypto. Really, there's just a lot of conversations happening right now about like Layer Zero is about to launch their token. There's a lot of eyes on that. ZK Sync is after that. And then the reflections on the Eigen drop and even some of the, like the mobs that we have seen pre-Eigen. There's just a lot of like dots, I think, that are worthy and interesting to reflect on. And this is an attempt to give our takes about all of the reflections that I can put together.
All right. Well, we are going to give you guys the autopsy. We're going to cut open the body of this market and see what's inside. See what killed the victim. I don't know if that's what David's saying, but we'll get to all of that and more. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible, including our recommended crypto exchange, certainly alive and well. That is Kraken. Go create an account.
If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Have you ever felt that the tools for developing decentralized applications are too restrictive and fail to leverage advancements from traditional software programming? There's a wide wide range of expressive building blocks beyond conventional smart contracts and Solidity development. Don't waste your time building the basics from scratch, and don't limit the potential of your vision. Cartesi provides powerful and scalable solutions for developers that supercharge app development. With a Cartesi virtual machine, you can run a full Linux OS and access decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling for building in Web3. And with Cartesi's unique rollup framework, you'll get real-world scaling and computation. No more competing for block space. So, if you're a developer looking to push the boundaries of what's possible in Web3, Cartesi is now offering up to $50,000 in grants. Head over to Cartesi's grant application page to apply today. And if you're not a developer, those with staked CTSI can take part in the governance process and vote on whether or not a proposal should be funded. Make sure you're vote ready by staking your CTSI before the votes open. Launching a token? Worried about the IRS? Talk to Toku for 5 minutes to learn how to save hundreds of thousands of dollars for you, your team, and your investors. Now, if you do an initial consultation, Toku will cover the cost of your token valuation, which is what you need for your launch. So don't wait. Reach out to the team right now at team@toku.com. That's team@toku.com.
All right, David, you got to start by explaining yourself here, because the title of this episode and your article is Why This Cycle is Cooked. And I want to define what you mean by cycle, all mm-hmm. right? And then cooked. What are you talking about here? Justify yourself. Why are you coming in with this strong language?
Yeah, so there's two different cycles that's going on here. There's the one I was alluding to in the intro, which is the token distribution meta, how the industry is choosing to distribute tokens in the current year, the current cycle. And then there's like the bull market cycle. I'm very firmly talking about the former, the actual mechanism of distributing tokens. I think that part is quote unquote cooked. The bull market cycle can exist and be independent from this. They are highly related, and they have been highly related at times, but they're not perfectly related. So the bull market cycle, the price action of all these things, I'm not really necessarily talking about that. I'm mainly talking about how this particular equilibrium of how teams are distributing tokens is going to change. And I think the market is ready for alternatives.
So I think what you're saying is there's kind of two cycles at play, and they're yep. interrelated, but we always get them both during like a bull cycle. And that mm-hmm. is, one is the cycle of token distribution, right? Kind mm-hmm. of like more tokens, more liquidity. And the other is just like the price action bull market cycle, what most people refer to when they talk about the cycle. And you think that those two are independent, but also interrelated.
Yeah.
And when you say cycle, this cycle is cooked, you're talking about the token distribution cycle. Yeah. The thing that we're in now, where we get like this airdrop cycle, maybe this points
yeah.
meta, the current distribution attempt that's going on, you think that part is cooked?
Yeah, and I titled it, This Cycle is Cooked, just because it kind of rolls off the tongue better. This meta is cooked just doesn't really ring the same, but that's really what I mean. This token meta distribution is cooked. And one of the reasons why I think it's cooked is because this whole system, this whole structure, there are structurally bad vibes going on right now. So all of these like super hyped tokens are coming to market, and we're seeing a pattern of angry protocol users that are feeling like they are getting the shit end of the stick. They feel like they're getting pittance from the actual airdrops that are going on. So these very hyped tokens, they very frequently launch at multi-billion dollar fully diluted valuations. And when tokens launch at multi-billion dollar fully diluted valuations, that means that most of the upside has already been discovered, because no one is getting rich buying, investing in a $10 billion asset. Like that is like a long-term investment. That is not like, that's not like the 100X, the 1000X that people really look for when they come into crypto. And so sure, you can be at a long-term investor, but like no one's getting rich buying a $10 billion token. And since, because of the way that these tokens are being distributed, user allocations, the airdrops going to people, are predetermined by the teams. And the details around allocation weights and criteria are unknown, both before and after the drop. And users, really as a result, feel like they're getting the raw end of the deal for their extremely crucial role in actually providing a protocol with users and also meaningful decentralization. As like every like wink, wink, dog whistle that every team is saying, like, hey, we're going to decentralize our protocol. Everyone knows that that means token, and users receiving tokens is the act of a protocol decentralizing. And so this is like a rite of passage for every single protocol. This is a rite of passage for anything that exists in crypto that's a protocol with a token, is how it decentralizes. And it decentralizes to users. And this is critical for the decentralization of our industry. This process, people are not satisfied with just because of the current meta, the current structure for how these tokens are getting distributed.
I think you're making the case for like structurally bad vibes. Like I want to hear your data points for this. Like why are you feeling this? Like, so I'll agree it's felt this way maybe from a, not structurally, I'll leave that aside, but just the bad vibes have been here maybe for the past like couple of weeks. The Eigen drop seemed to like be dropped at a time when vibes were already bad and like things kind of like got worse. But before that, I would say in like, you know, March or even earlier in April, and certainly before this year, the vibes were great in crypto. And like, isn't that just like correlated with price? I guess what I'm saying is you're making a stronger argument here and you're saying there's structural bad vibes. So I think you're trying to say that it's persistent and it's going to continue because there's some sort of underlying structural reason. But like, are you sure it's just not a mood? You know, like we're kind of in a mood. It's May. I don't know. What is it? Sell in May and then go away. I mean, like maybe, you know, it's just a momentary mood in crypto and the good vibes continue for airdrops and like points and everything else after this. So like, what are your data points here?
I do kind of think that this cycle particularly have had some of the worst vibes that I've seen. Like bull markets, things are supposed to be like healthy and happy and everyone's happy, but I don't know if I'm experiencing that. Vibes is highly correlated to price action, of course. It's highly correlated to the supply of liquidity. And there hasn't been like an overwhelming inflow of liquidity this cycle like there has been last cycle. Bitcoin has seen an inflow of liquidity. Solana has seen an inflow of liquidity. And that's about it. And it hasn't been like Regan said in the episode, it hasn't been a rising tide lifts all boats cycle. Bitcoin is receiving liquidity because of the Bitcoin ETF. And so that's net new liquidity. Solana is receiving liquidity because of the meme coin speculation. But there's other than that, like the rest of the industry is actually playing tug of war over like not that much liquidity.
But you're just saying, but like you said, there's something structural here. Yeah. Right? What's the structural element to this?
Yeah. Okay. So the structural element is the relationship between like how much private capital there is versus how much public capital there is. And also the points token airdrop meta doesn't do something that's very, very critical for crypto, something that we've seen every other cycle do, which is allow for online communities to get rich together. Fostering internet bonds by growing wealth together has been like a rite of passage that basically every single survivor in crypto, anyone who's made it through the cycle, has all experienced. I think people who like don't make it in crypto likely did not get rich with their internet friends together as a community. That's been like one of the core affordances that crypto is like, hey, online communities can band together and get rich with your friends, right? We're not experiencing that this cycle nearly as much. Meme coins are doing that. Whiff online community got rich with their friends. But like with this whole high FDV token drop meta is not allowing communities to band together around projects and get rich around a project. We saw this behavior with Link, the Link Marines. We saw this behavior with like the Avalanche army. And all of these people had the opportunity to like ride the success of the protocol up. And that's not really something that we're seeing with high FDV token airdrops.
But let me push back on that. Isn't that because basically like you have to buy during the bear markets, right?
Sure.
So we're in a bull market. It's like, don't you think there's an element of unfair expectation? So one community that there's a tremendous amount of energy in right now is the Solana community. And that's because like some of these people rode Solana all the way down to like $12 or something like this. Yep. And some of them even doubled down and purchased Solana. And they have gotten like rich. What are we at now? Still in the like 100 levels or, you know, like 200 levels at one point in time? I mean, that's like a nice 10x.
Totally.
Like that feels pretty good. And so we're seeing a lot of energy there. So like a multi-cycler might push back on that and just be basically like, well, yeah, you can't get rich in one cycle. If you're saying that the vibes are bad because not enough retail has made enough money, it's just kind of like, well, when did you enter? And like, what did you purchase, right? Is there not the argument that, you can't expect this in kind of like the bull market. And so, you know, it is happening in pockets.
specifically to people who are here during the bear market?
Sure, sure. I think that's totally right. Like, one of the issues with this, and one of the reasons why there are like Twitter mobs going on, is that tokens are launching at multi-billion dollar FDV. Communities are getting like 5%, 10%. But also the high FDV, low market cap gap means that this token has to like suffer a ton of sell pressure before it can go up. So like, yeah, the bad vibes are coming because in order for people to get rich on these things, they have to go down in price by a lot first, and then they can go up next cycle. But like, yeah, now we are experiencing bad vibes because this is what's coming first. There's also, I want to like talk about the public versus private market as well. In 2021, there was an abundant amount of raises going on into new funds, and like records amounts of capital going into records amount of new funds in crypto.
VC funds, you're talking about.
VC like, funds.
Like VC funds. Kind of like yeah. Private funds that retail couldn't access.
And so you can see just like the gargantuan amount of raises that happened in 2021 and 2022, like $12 billion on average per quarter for like three or four quarters in a row going into new funds. All of that capital that was raised last cycle deployed during 2022 and 2023, and it's still deploying to this day. And now a lot of those investments that all of this abundant VC capital invested in are going into the tokens that you're seeing come onto the market today. With the massive amounts of capital that went into the private markets last cycle, think of like the public versus private markets as a teeter-totter. And like there's a lot of VC capital on the private market side of things. And so the path for people, for projects, is to raise like up to like multi-billion dollar valuations in the private markets because there's that much capital out there. There is that much capital from like A16Z, Paradigm, like these massive multi-billion dollar funds that so like projects can stay private up to a multi-billion dollar valuation, up to like $1 billion plus. And so that means it's rational to do this when tokens are launching at like 5, 10, $15 billion FDVs. Like even if you are the last VC fund in through the gate at a 1, 2, $3 billion valuation, you're still getting a 5X. You're still getting a 10X. So it's still rational to do this. The problem with it's like maybe this worked in previous cycles, but the problem now is that there's actually not much new retail interest coming into crypto. And we actually know this from a number of different data sources, but the most recent one was Coinbase's Q2 report that just came out. Institutional trading volume up bigly, obviously, because they are the custodians of all the Bitcoin ETFs. Institutions are here. They're literally buying our bags. And so like one of the sources of new liquidity this cycle is like crypto natives that bought like $12,000, $15,000 Bitcoin during the bear market are selling like Larry Fink their $60,000 Bitcoin right now, right? So that's where a lot of this capital recycling is coming from. But the trading volume for retail has not nearly come back to 2021 levels. $56 billion in trading volume this last Q1 of 2024, whereas at the peak of last cycle, it was $177 billion one quarter, or $145 billion.
But retail's not here yet, right? I mean, this retail's is interesting. If you look at it in terms of like mapping to the last cycle, it's much more like 2020 than it is 2021. Correct. In terms of retail participation. Correct. We've kind of known that. So retail's not here. But I guess what you're saying is when you map this chart with the previous chart, which is like all of this VC capital raised, this to me, it looks kind of like a Python, like trying to eat its meal.
Yeah.
And all of this capital has to just like go through the Python stomach and like make its way down the snake. And maybe that's what we're seeing. That's why the vibes are bad.
Right. There is just a huge dislocation between public and private markets. Public markets have no new entrants, few new entrants. And private markets have like billions and billions of dollars left over from the 2021, 2022 raises. And all of these tokens, the tokens that are coming to market, things below Bitcoin and ETH, this is what Regan said in our podcast, the tokens below Bitcoin and ETH are predominantly owned by retail. The market caps of these long tail of tokens in the industry are like propped up by like retail interest and retail investment. And so for a lot of the VCs who are invested in tokens that are going to market, the price of those tokens is determined by like retail interest in those tokens. The problem is there's the teeter-totter between VC capital, private market capital, and public market capital is just so heavily weighted towards the private markets that, of course, we're seeing an inevitable outcome of this, the logical conclusion, which is a high FDV, low float token with a low market cap, relatively low market cap. And so this is basically what turns into sell pressure. Vance Spencer put out this tweet that did some napkin math, some loose napkin math, and modeled out that there's $200 to $300 billion of sell pressure that is coming into a market because of the high FDV supply of tokens. And so like doing some like very rough numbers kind of comes to the conclusion that of all the FDV that's out there, the fully diluted valuation that's not yet diluted, when that dilution comes, it's going to turn into about $200 to $300 billion in sell pressure for a market that requires retail bids in order to support it. But we just saw like the Coinbase Q1 like trading volumes. We had like $47 billion of trading volume just on Coinbase from retail in Q1. And we've got $200 to $300 billion in sell pressure about over the next like 18 months. And so that's just like a lot of sell pressure. There's like,
so this is the same story. If you have too many tokens, not enough buyers, right?
Correct.
I mean, like correct. A classic story. And a lot of these tokens are held by kind of like VCs basically, and that needs mm-hmm. to be absorbed by the retail. By the way, retail has the choice to buy it or not, right?
Right.
Even when they receive an airdrop, they have the opportunity to kind of sell that. It's mm-hmm. interesting, like a lot of the VCs are locked, right? At least for a year. Right. They have mm-hmm. usually 3 to 4 year lockups, but many of them are locked up for a year. Vance also says, this is the first cycle where retail is actually paying attention to unlocks. So retail starting to get smarter about FDV and lockups. That's you know all a why, good thing, right?
You know why that's happening? It's because there's no new retail. It's all people from last cycle who experienced unlocks. So they know the game by one more cycle. These aren't retail anymore. It's crypto native retail.
Well, that's good then. That's good. It is good. They should, because then that will be the market.
It's literally smart money retail.
But you're saying basically this contributes to this malaise that we've seen over the past like couple of weeks around structurally bad vibes, around specifically token distribution, specifically mm-hmm. around airdrops. You think it's mm-hmm. all driven by this, and this is why people like get free money in their airdrop and they still hate it.
And they still hate it. Yeah. I think this is one half of the answer. The other half of the answer is the regulatory climate, which is also structurally bad vibes. But before we get into like the regulatory climate, let's just go through like a quick run through history. The points in airdrop meta is actually just like the current stop on this ever-changing meta of how the crypto industry distributes tokens. Like I said earlier, like this is like a core component of how crypto works. We make new things, and then new things have new tokens, and then we distribute the tokens. And like some things actually like last, most things don't. 2013, we had the proof of work fork and fair launch meta. That was actually spawned, funnily enough, by Litecoin, which was the only token to really meaningfully last beyond that meta. And I wouldn't even consider Litecoin a live ecosystem to this day. 2017, the ICO meta. We do have some survivors out of that. Synthetics is a survivor out of that. Aave is a survivor out of that. I think Link did an ICO. Some survivors. DeFi summer, liquidity mining in 2020. Plenty of survivors there. 2021 NFT mints. And now in 2024, the points and airdrop meta. This just is what happens in crypto. We come up with like distribution mechanisms. But eventually every meta ends once it's been identified. And like, you know, Goodhart's law, when a measure becomes a target, it ceases to become a good measure. Once the meta is known, then the meta moves on. And this is because of two reasons. Once the meta is identified by both, one, grifters who know how to exploit it, who learn how to exploit it, and two, lawyers who understand how it violates securities laws, then the meta becomes exhausted. Like the lawyers put on the brakes on the ICO meta once everyone realized that what an ICO is an unregistered sale of securities. But then also grifters also identify the ICO meta and they just use it for fraud. And so these two parties are trying to identify the meta. And then once the meta is identified, we move on because the game is up.
I think when you say lawyers, I would maybe substitute by like kind of like regulators, basically, who just kind of like, you know, are a few cycles behind. Like the lawyers are trying to navigate like right. how to distribute a token in this like super opaque regulatory landscape.
Right.
And like it just kind of like stops working. Once like regulators start suing, remember the ICO meta, it was like totally broken by US versus the SEC and right. like, you know, the regulators kind of stepping in and putting a stop to it.
Right. Yeah. Well, the lawyers are paying attention to the regulators and then they are advising their projects like, hey, you can or cannot do that. And as the regulators get wise, then the lawyers are like, okay, you can no longer do this.
Well, I think the big insight here, though, which is interesting, and I think something that you've talked about for a while, which I think is sort of hidden that people see, which is like every single bull cycle is also accompanied by a token distribution meta, mm-hmm. a new game that's effectively being played that has some similarities to the previous game, but also has some important differences, right? Every single crypto cycle has been about distribution, mm-hmm. fair distribution to retail of tokens. Right. That is like part of the underlying reason why we even get bull cycles in the first mm-hmm. place. And so now we're at kind of the most recent one, which is like the points and airdrop mm-hmm. Type of meta. And I think you're calling the top on that.
Yes, I'm calling the top on the points and airdrop meta. And like I said, we're still going to experience it for a while. Like when the top of the 2017 ICO meta was about like November-ish, maybe a little earlier of that meta, but you still saw ICOs going well into 2018. It was just like the last fumes of the ICO meta. It lasted like a year. And so I'm kind of like calling the top on like the market is now looking for alternatives to the points and airdrop distribution method. And now it's up to some creative founder, some creative team to come up with a new token distribution strategy that makes their community happy, makes their community rich, and is also like unique and innovative and does the job that is required, which is kind of obfuscating the fact that there's a token distribution method happening right now.
I think we'll get back to maybe the reason why a certain distribution only lasts for a while, and also talk about like, you know, regulators and that being a driving force to this. But really to just camp out on even as far back as proof of work, like mm-hmm. Bitcoin proof of work. Okay. Right. People don't see that as a token distribution play.
It was the original token distribution
play. Yeah. And the reason why is because we are so many years far removed from that. Yeah. Where like all you know, like Bitcoin mining is and Ethereum mining is like, or you know, previously all Bitcoin mining was industrial basically, mm-hmm. but there was a time and place where people ran like their computers and they mined Bitcoin from their laptops in their mm-hmm. home in order to receive what the distribution of that Bitcoin,
right?
It's like it's always been about token distribution to participants. That's mm-hmm. part of what drives these market cycles. That's part of what gets people excited. And the more fair, the more legitimate these distributions, mm-hmm. and the longer they last in kind of their clean, pristine state, like the better the outcome for the network itself, and I think for the community itself over the long run, because people get excited about these crypto networks because they've made money, because they got in through earning it or through purchasing it at a lower price than mm-hmm. where it is today.
Towards the beginning of the 2013 proof of work fork and fair launch meta, which Litecoin started, Litecoin was inspired by Bitcoin. It's like, hey, you can like do this blockchain thing with proof of work and then you can spawn a token. I will do that as well. Charlie Lee like spawns up Litecoin. And I think like in April of 2013, towards the earlier stages of the proof of work fork and fair launch meta, Bitcoin was at 1.5 billion. Litecoin was at 72 million. And the whole market cap was at like $1.55 billion. Like it was basically 98% Bitcoin. Yeah. But Charlie Lee just made a $72 million market cap. This was in 2013. No one knew what crypto was. This was unheard of. $72 million out of thin air. And so like the success of Litecoin spawned this like euthanasia roller coaster of proof of work, fork and fair launch. It's like, oh, we can just make blockchains.
Yep.
You don't have to just own Bitcoin. You can also make your own blockchain.
Yeah, all and these copycats.
Just copycats. It's exploded. And that was the first like Cambrian explosion of crypto assets that the crypto industry ever saw. And each one like was trying to distribute their token fairly legitimately. It ended up getting corrupted by grifters because the grifters figured out the meta, and that's how it ended. And this has been repeated every cycle ever since.
Well, I think that's the pattern, right? It's going to be corrupted by grifters and for like anyone that's trying to game the system, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so every system with respect to like a new token distribution is going to get gamed over time. It's also going to get constrained, I think, by the regulators. And now
100%. We're at that's this the other half of this for us.
That's the other half of this, right? Because like part of the distribution is to sort of find a way to get these tokens in an ungameable way to retail and in a fair way to retail. And some of the regulations we have on the books make that very difficult. In particular here, SEC securities law. This is a a post from Chris Dixon. I think he published this in Fortune magazine or some sort of like, you know, like more normie centric of, you know, like financial publication, how bad policy favors memes over matter. And he's basically saying that part of the explanation for the meme coin mania that we've seen is because there's no clear path to a token getting regulatory status, at least in the US. And of course, the US drives a lot of these capital markets around the world towards a token actually having some share of cash flows, some share of like, you know, what traditional finance would consider a fundamental, right? And so what are we left with? These sort of like much more empty shells of mimetic narrative trading meme coins. And so like you can, in every one of these cycles, push some of the reason why the cycle ends and why we've had to create like kind of a new cycle back to regulators and say, well, they're not, there is a market desire and a market need to do this. And you're not providing an output for that. Instead, you're just taking the ban hammer and just saying, no, it's not possible. And so every single cycle, there's sort of a different way to like route around this and try to find a way to distribute the token in a way that is like regulatorily compliant. And it keeps just getting more and more restricted, doesn't it?
And it's a catch-22, where any team that is interested in providing real utility, real fundamentals to a community, that violates securities laws. And so, like, no shit, the meta has moved towards Solana meme coins because meme coins just don't violate securities laws. And if anyone ever thought about injecting utility into their meme coin, like, straight to jail. Like the SEC is like, no, you can't do that. You can't do
Now you made it.
No fundamentals for retail, only memes for retail.
Right.
So this kind of identifies the current problem with the points meta. People have now understood that points kind of suck. Why do they suck? They offer point collectors zero assurances on what they are actually receiving because the relationship between points earned and tokens received must be opaque. The disconnect between the points and the tokens is the cover that startups are receiving. That's the cover, the regulatory cover that they have from the SEC. Like, points aren't securities, they're just points. Oh, and then we just also happen to release a token for completely unrelated reasons to people, but the points are separate.
So it's funny you say points suck because I'm old enough to remember, David, 3 months ago when points didn't suck, or like even like 6 months before that, when they were basically the way you could kind of like pre-release and make a drop of your token much more fair, right?
Right.
I think that's the point of this entire conversation, right?
Right.
When a new distribution method for tokens is kind of like started, at first it doesn't suck. At first it's actually really good, but you can start to see like the fault lines in that distribution and how it'll fall apart in the early stages of that. And like it leads to some gamification of it. It leads to eventual exhaustion. Yeah. Exploitation, and it leads to the meta eventually like sucking. But like points don't inherently suck from my perspective. They're just like a tool that's being used. Right. And it wasn't too long ago where many people on crypto, I think we did an entire episode about like the value, like how points are cool, what some of the trade-offs are, all of these things. So like they don't just suck. It's just now
it's the nature of the people that use them that can suck, and we should be wary of that. Like again, the investor protections around points are zero. Retail has no clarity on like what a point actually gives them or what their rewards are. So like for the points, if you're receiving points of like any particular protocol, like what is that a claim on? Is that future? Is that 5% of the future tokens? Is it 15% of the future tokens? Some points are worth more than others because some actions are deemed more valuable by the project than others. Like not all points are created equal. And so the investor protections around points are basically zero. And we talked about some of the pros of points. Like points are kind of the regulatory sandbox that projects have been asking for so that they can tinker with the issuance of their token without actually it being permanent. And so like it's a pencil of a token rather than a pen of a token. And so some projects have been able to leverage this property just to like iterate before they ink out the actual real distribution of their token. And I think that's like an enjoyable fact, having some sort of pseudo regulatory sandbox that we just discovered rather than received. But nonetheless, like points as an assurance of rights over the value being contributed to a protocol by retail and versus the value getting back to retail, there's like, it's just all completely opaque because if there was any sort of explicit articulation of the relationship between points and tokens, that project that made that articulation would be in violation of the SEC and securities laws. So they can't do that. Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and liquidity and on-ramps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle. Taking self-custody of your crypto is one of the most important things you can do on your bankless journey. It's also one of the hardest things to get right, with huge consequences if you don't. If you want help going bankless, talk to Casa. Casa helps you take custody of your crypto assets so you don't have to wonder whether you're doing it right. Casa is a one-stop shop for doing self-custody the right way. With Casa Vaults, you can hold Ether, Bitcoin, stablecoins, all with one simple app and multiple keys for the ultimate peace of mind, with a support team to help you every step of the way. But it doesn't stop at self-custody. Because even though crypto is forever, you are not. We all plan on making life-changing wealth in crypto, but with Casa's inheritance product, life-changing wealth can elevate to generational wealth for your kids and your loved ones who don't know anything about crypto. With Casa, you won't lose your private keys and you won't accidentally take them to the grave either. Click the link in the description to get started securing your generational wealth. Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world, driving real-world use cases like mobile payments and mobile DeFi, and with Opera MiniPay as one of the fastest growing Web3 wallets, Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 300 million transactions and 1.5 million monthly active addresses. And now Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer two. Optimism, Polygon, Matter Labs, and Arbitrum have all thrown their hats in the ring for the Celo layer two to build upon their stacks. Why the competition? The Celo layer two will bring huge advantages like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability secured by Ethereum validators, and one block finality. What does that all mean for you? With Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas natively using ERC20 tokens, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forums, follow Celo on Twitter, and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum. Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you're a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be: secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities.
I think you're saying this on the back of the Eigen airdrop, which was like mainly points driven and got such a negative bad vibe type of reaction. Mm-hmm. There are a few more upcoming airdrops to sort of watch. One is in motion, I think, right now, mm-hmm. which is Layer Zero. And they're doing something different. I wasn't fully up to speed on this, but there's some sort of anti-Sybil kind of mechanism at play. What's happening with Layer Zero and why is that one to watch?
Both Layer Zero and EigenLayer, and I think really anyone issuing a points-based airdrop, everyone is just stuck between a rock and a hard place. I believe all of these protocols are asking in their best intentions, and none of them really deserve to be like mobbed. But the mob is a result of the fact that like of the rock and the hard place that a lot of these projects have found themselves pushed there by the SEC. One of the current issues going around that like, I think is an interesting thing to watch is Layer Zero's Sybil reporting initiative. And so Layer Zero is saying, hey, if you are Sybiling our airdrop, if you are spinning up puppet accounts and you are just kind of pushing fake activity using many, many different wallets, if you are doing that activity, just self-report yourself as a Sybil, and we will give you 15% of what you would have otherwise earned. If you don't report yourself, we're going to give a bounty for somebody else to report you, and they're going to earn like 10% or 5% or some minority of share.
Oh, wow. If you don't report yourself and we find out through some other way, whether someone else reports you or we find out, then
you get zero.
You get zero.
And there's a bounty for people who report you. And so it's basically a big Sybil like pruning mechanism. Cain Warwick wrote a thread saying that this is actually not a good strategy by Layer Zero, and actually is not the right thing to do because Layer Zero has benefited from the metrics of all these different Sybilers, quote unquote Sybilers, because like, look at all the activity going through Layer Zero. Look at all the assets going through Layer Zero. Look at all the volume and all the users and all the transactions. Clearly, the metrics behind Layer Zero support them as an ecosystem and have supported their ability to raise at a very high valuation. And so Kane is claiming that Layer Zero has benefited from the Sybilers, but now they are pruning Sybilers from their token distribution. And so there's like an is-ought gap between these things, whereas like Layer Zero is benefiting from Sybil attacks, but then they're pruning away the Sybilers in the token distribution. And one of the problems here, again, created by the SEC, created by this cornering of crypto companies into this meta, is that somebody who is a small-time retail investor has no way of gaining exposure to Layer Zero. Say like some individual is just like really bullish Layer Zero, and they want upside to Layer Zero. How do they do that as a community member? The only way to do that, if you are especially bullish Layer Zero, is to Sybil attack Layer Zero. And not even attack, just Sybil Layer Zero. Like, I'm so bullish Layer Zero, I'm going to put
10 wallets.
Spin up 10 wallets.
As an individual.
Push like 10 ETH through in like 17,000 different transactions because you are so bullish Layer Zero that you want that token, so you're going to Sybil Layer Zero. Which, unfortunately, makes you identical to somebody who is maliciously attacking Layer Zero with the intent to immediately dump that token.
You're just saying there's no way like in, so they just climb the fence, basically, is what you're saying. That's a charitable explanation for why individuals might engage in this type of behavior. Not to discount, though, there are actual like industrial Sybil farms that are just like actually like doing this in the most unethical way like possible. And they are like exploiting. And that's why protocols like Layer Zero are trying to stop them, because it's a massive cost. No one wants that outcome. Retail doesn't want the outcome of like all of these tokens going to industrial airdrop farmers. And certainly the projects themselves don't. And that could be like a lot of money.
A lot of the
value of the project on the line going to these industrial farmers. So you can understand why they're trying to prevent it as well.
Totally. And this is just like the unfortunate cornering that I think the SEC has placed the crypto industry in. And what this meta allows for is that retail individuals who are bullish on Layer Zero cannot differentiate themselves from mercenary, vampiric, like high industrial, highly scaled airdrop farmers who are going to dump that Layer Zero token as soon as they get it. Like, retail doesn't have a chance to like differentiate themselves unless they are just like an honest individual user. But then they lose out to the mercenary airdrop farmers. And this is why both regulatory and grifter pressures always end token distribution metas. And this is what we are seeing right now.
One other factor that I know I've mentioned in previous episodes, we just haven't named them here, is those industrial airdrop farmers as well. They're not just Sybil attacking protocols by like spinning up tens of thousands of addresses potentially. They are also like Sybil attacking the social layer in the narrative. Mm-hmm. If they could spin up a bot basically to create kind of like a fake identity to be a recipient of their airdrop, you think they can't do that on Twitter? Of course they can. This is like another context, another layer of the question here is like, when I see some of these mobs, there's definitely some portion of it. And I can't say the percent because it's just like difficult to tell. There's some portion of this that is actually like retail who legitimately wanted exposure to the project and is just climbing the fence to get it because there's no other way to get into the project. So this is what they have to do. There's also a portion that I know that I'm certain are like industrial farmers attempting to farm the narrative as well and exploit the narrative. And like, they're doing that at scale. And I think sometimes they pull others into their extreme positions, right? And like, so how do you even know what's real or what's not? I don't think we have a very clear pulse on like a voice of retail here, at least on crypto Twitter, that, you know, like the primary way you receive this. So that's another compounding factor. Is it's not just the protocols themselves being gamed. It's actually the social layer around this. Because if they can push a project into distributing more tokens to their industrial farms, essentially, like, it's totally worth it. How much does it cost to spin up a whole bunch of bots on Twitter? So again, I'm not saying that's all of the activity here. It's certainly not, but it's some portion of it. And they can also just, you know, move the Overton window by taking an extremist position to be like, scam, 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 scam. They pull some retail in that direction who are already predisposed to thinking of like, why do I have to climb the fence anyway? Right. Yeah. And like, so that's at play as well.
Structurally bad vibes. And so you have like the community members who like we talk to inside of the Bankless Discord who are like, I feel disregarded by these protocols.
Sure.
And then you also have like our chat box on YouTube, which is just filled with literal bots going scam, 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 scam as fast as possible. Where there was like 500 people watching that show, but there were like 500 comments every single minute. Like, I'm sorry, that's a bot. But nonetheless, retail still feels like they are getting the shit end of the stick because they kind of are, because of the unbalanced amount of capital in the private markets versus the public markets. And oh, by the way, the whole like nerfing of teams distributing tokens to the public market incentivizes anyone who can to invest as LPs in VC companies, because that's where the regulatory constraints don't exist. They only exist once they go public. And so there's a huge nerfing by the SEC of public market capital. And so anyone who has gotten over the fence of being an accredited investor chooses to LP inside of a VC fund instead of buying tokens on the public market.
There are a few drops to, I think, watch. One is, of course, we mentioned Layer Zero. It's going to be interesting to see how ZK Sync kind of handles this. That's going to be another drop that, you like, I got to imagine happens this year. There's also an alternative to all of this, which is what Friend.Tech is doing, where I think they distributed 100% of their tokens to the community. This is still early, but that's another chart that I'm going to be watching, because I guess that's like the, you know, completely fair way to do things, at least according to Friend.Tech.
Yeah, I don't understand how Friend.Tech released 100% of the tokens to users. Like, that's pretty cool, but then also like, but what about the team?
Is that sustainable for the team? Like, what
why would the team work on Friend.Tech if they own zero tokens?
Right, but that's another experiment at play, and like a possible emergence of a next new narrative around this, or a next new meta around this, as you call it. So let's end this episode by talking about where we go from here. And I want to bring up this concept to you, David. I know you're familiar with the Red Queen like concept from biology, which is like you're on kind of this treadmill of adaptation in like a competitive world environment. So you never actually catch evolution. We're talking about evolution. Here's a ChatGPT. The concept from evolutionary biology that suggests species must continuously adapt and evolve, not just for reproductive advantage, but just simply to survive, right? Mm-hmm. That's like the Red Queen effect. You see this with organisms. You're never done, essentially. Yeah. It's always something going to be gamed in a competitive landscape.
In chess terms, this is defined as like, if you don't make the best possible move, then you are making a losing move.
Right. So what we have essentially here is a Red Queen problem. Mm-hmm. And like, Red Queen problems never go away, essentially. Mm-hmm. They always remain. And so I think that this problem is not going to be fixed by any like silver bullet regulation or a new SEC chair, or like Congress finally gets things together and like we're able to figure out what tokens are versus securities and have a clean line in the sand, or we uncover this like fair launch that is actually fair. Because what we've seen is at the beginning of each of these token distributions, it has been pure, right? Mm-hmm. Like it has been like Bitcoin. The immaculate crypto project to launch. Okay. Ethereum had its sort of like ICO, which was actually pure in that time before ICOs got gained.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You had Compound, which is looked at favorably from a drop perspective. Uniswap was probably the peak of the DeFi summer sort of token governance drop. And you have some examples from this cycle as well, but it's always going to be gamed. You have a Red Queen problem, so it's never actually going to be completely solved. It's just going to evolve in another direction. So is that the essential prediction? Is like, be aware of that, that's what's going on, that's the game that's being played here. Be aware when it's over and look on the horizon for the next one.
Well, that's why we're titling this episode, "This Cycle is Cooked." I think that this meta is cooked. And we are, the market is now looking for alternative teams to distribute their tokens in creative, egalitarian ways that allow communities to do one of the core affordances of crypto, which is to get rich together online with your internet friends. And right now, the high FDV airdrop points meta is not doing that. And so as soon as some scrapping young team, some smart creative founder finds a new way to distribute a token that allows people to get rich with their internet friends, then that the new meta will go there. And I think right now, as a result of like the mob attacks and the Sybil farming that's very Sybil and toxic versus like the Sybil farming of like highly committed users, the fact that we can't differentiate between those people, the market is now looking for a new meta. We are looking for like a new phase. Someone needs to invent it. Someone has to get creative. But right now, I think this meta is cooked and we need to look for a new one.
And hopefully we find a new one in the context of this cycle, because it feels
price cycle. Yeah.
This price cycle. So let's zoom out to the price cycle for a minute, David. So you are not saying that this cycle is over.
No.
We might uncover a new distribution meta in the bounds of this cycle. It seems very clear that retail has not entered at all. This is all kind of crypto natives playing games with one another at this point in time. But like retail hopefully will enter at some point this cycle. So how, like, do you have any predictions for the price cycle then? If this meta is dead, do we get another like token distribution meta in this cycle? And like, will number go up still?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the sectors of the crypto industry that all of this cooking of the points meta is not affecting. And that's Bitcoin. Bitcoin ETFs will still grow. We're in a little bit of a 1-month-long hiatus right now from the growth of the Bitcoin ETFs, but those will still grow. Meme coins, unaffected. So like meme coin sector will live or die for independent reasons other than the points meta. And so that's why the cycle has been defined by these two things right now, like meme coins and the Bitcoin ETF. The ETH ETF is still a thing, whether it gets approved this year, next year, whenever, it's eventually going to be approved. And if we can discover a new fair egalitarian token distribution mechanism inside of this bull market cycle, then like it's a plus one to like the super cycle or like a longer, bigger cycle concept. If it takes a while to discover this new meta, and then the ETH ETF doesn't get approved and the Bitcoin ETF flows don't happen, then like maybe you see a stunted cycle and we kind of got to wait for next turn. There's a number of different permutations of like futures here.
Well, let's just end it there then, David. As always, got to let you know, crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.